What the hell was that?
Can you hear me now?
Can you hear me?
Hello?
Yeah. Are you there?
We gotta get rid of this kook. I got an idea.
Greatness at its finest.
Welcome to the Rodcast.
Wonder who that could be.
On the Horn, 104.9 AM 1260.
Come on, why you want to play a brother like that?
And hornfm.com.
Is there a problem back there?
Where the Longhorns play and Austin talks sports.
Freak flag, feel good, fake it till you make it. Football Friday edition of the Rodcast. The gang's all here. You can be a part of it. Hit us up on the Specs text line. Best way to do it, 512-337-3776. I'm at Rod Babers in the Twitterverse. My man Ray is back there twisting and tweaking the dials. You can hit him up at Ray from the 361. We got a lot to get to on the show. As a matter of fact, we'll start, of course, with the college basketball scandal exposing the college basketball black market, if you will. We'll jump into that story, of course, because it has a Longhorn connections. We'll also talk about the NBA's first of many, but what I think is the first response to the Mark Cuban, or at least the Dallas Mavericks scandal about from Sports Illustrated about the sexual misconduct or the environment of sexual misconduct and harassment for years, and Mark Cuban being at the center of that. I think the NBA has, you know, kind of really declared their first response to that, maybe unofficially, but we'll get into that too in the rundown. We'll also talk about it a little bit more in depth after the rundown. We got to get into some draft discussion. The draft discussion is starting to get really, really interesting. Scouts are like critics, essentially, so they, you know, this is the scouting season. You hear about scouts. There's the anonymous scout and all these different guys who used to be scouts give their opinions on the players during the draft process, what they're going to be looking at, where they think they should fall in the draft and where they rank them and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, scouts are critics. So this is the time of year usually you hear the negative aspects of these players and you hear negativity about them, and there's a ton of it. So we'll get into it a little bit more. It's mostly about the quarterbacks, and we'll talk about that. We talked about Lamar Jackson a ton because Mel Kiper and Bill Polian, you know, guys like that, have been throwing out these very negative scouting reports about Lamar Jackson, and Bill Polian says he's moving the wide receiver, which some people think is absolutely asinine. I'm in that camp too. But he's entitled to his opinion, and he's a longtime NFL mind, so you got to respect it. Anyway, Baker Mayfield now is now becoming a big, you know, topic of discussion, and people are, you know, starting to question some of the drawbacks and the liabilities in his skill set and his development. So we'll get into that, because we knew that was coming too, considering Baker Mayfield's height and considering the persona of Baker Mayfield on the field, crotch grabbing, all that kind of stuff, crotch grabbing, flag planting, fan rousing, whatever. All right, the guy does it all. All right, he's a one man show. So a lot of that stuff also is coming into question too. So we'll have a lot of fun with it and go through the quarterbacks and go through some of the scouting reports and some of the things that are being said and where they rank in the mock drafts. We'll do that coming up here next segment. Also coming up a little bit later on the show is Freak Flag Friday. So of course we'll get into Freaky Tales. We'll do that coming up in the 2 o'clock hour. Let's not waste any time. Let's get into all the headlines you need to know, you should know, in today's rundown.
It's time!
These are the top headlines of the day. It's time for the rundown.
All right, the rundown, as always, brought to you by good friends at Top Gun Lawn and Equipment Rentals. TopGun.net with two N's is where you find out more about Top Gun Lawn and Equipment Rentals. All right, the biggest story in sports, the bombshell that was dropped about the college basketball scandals, and I use that word plural, scandals, exposing the black market of college basketball with agents paying players, trying to influence their decision about what school they're going to go to or what shoe company they're going to sign with after they get done with college in the one and done. It really has shown really a pattern of corruption all throughout the sport. Now, remember, initially this was exposed by the FBI through wiretapping. It actually led to arrests and charges. But now the documents from all of the court rulings and the court filings and the wiretapping, those have been they haven't been leaked totally, but at least members of the media have found some of the information and tied it to college basketball, specifically the programs that are mentioned and the specific players that are mentioned in these court documents. Some of them current, some of them retroactive. At least 20 Division I basketball programs and 25 players mentioned in these court documents having to do with this FBI case about agents paying players, most notably the ASM agency. Andy Miller, an NBA agent, and his associate, I think it's his runner, Christian Dawkins, they exposed at least 20 different Division I basketball programs, including Duke, North Carolina, Texas, yep, Kentucky, Michigan State, USC, Alabama, and a host of other programs. Michigan State, as I mentioned, they were thrown in there as well. So the two players associated with the Texas program were Eric Davis and Prince Ibe. Prince Ibe, of course, no longer with the team. Now the focus is on Texas and what Texas is going to do about it now that they have been mentioned in this report, and specifically there have been players who have been mentioned. This response came from Brian Davis of the Austin American Statesman tweeted this out. Texas AD Chris Del Conte believe earlier today. He said, quote, "I was recently made aware of this morning's report regarding our men's basketball program. Coach Smart and I have talked. We are gathering facts, and I will address the situation when we have more information." So we don't know exactly how the investigation is going to go, how deep it's going to go. So right now, Texas has to look into their own closet of skeletons, you know, their own closet of skeletons, and try to figure out exactly who could be responsible and if there's somebody within the program who could be connected to or have knowledge of these players taking impermissible payments, or essentially not even benefits, actually they were being paid. It was like loans. And we'll get into that a little bit later on. There are a lot of interesting details about the story, but that is the part that relates to the Texas Longhorn basketball program. All right, here is another big story. The NBA. And what most people believe is in response to the story from Sports Illustrated exposing the Dallas Mavericks having a culture of sexual misconduct and sexual harassment over the last few years. The NBA has actually decided to enact or launch a confidential hotline to report workplace issues, including sexual harassment. I'm assuming domestic violence is in that category as well. According to a memo Commissioner Adam Silver sent to all 30 teams, he just sent it earlier today, or yesterday, I should say, at the close of business, basically yesterday. There's now a confidential hotline for everybody who works in any NBA office for any NBA team to call the NBA headquarters or the NBA office itself. And you can basically bypass any HR issues you may have with that individual team, which is what happened with the Dallas Mavericks, which is what Mark Cuban is being held accountable for. He, since the report came out, fired his head of HR, fired one of his beat writers and his beat reporters. He fired his head of HR because his head of HR was dismissing any reports or allegations of sexual harassment or domestic violence. Or he would just tell them to shut up and it doesn't matter. So he was doing that for a number of years, which obviously led to that culture of abuse within that organization. So that is something that's, you know, happening. It's a great idea to have a way for those employees to be able to bypass the corruption and then just go straight to the NBA office and report them. And who knows, this confidential hotline could lead to employees in other NBA organizations who are feeling, you know, abused or harassed in some sense, and that they could call the office right now and report them confidentially. I mean, that could, so it could lead to a steamroll in the NBA. I'm sure there are a lot of owners that may be freaking out about it. Really good idea. And I think a direct response to the Dallas Mavs scandal.
I knew Adam Silver would come up with something, man.
Man, that's genius.
Yeah, it really is. Genius. I love that idea.
I mean, every company should have it. I mean, most of the time, you know, and this is a great company because you have access to your HR. But, you know, I mean, a lot of companies, big companies, you don't have access to your HR. You got to call it in, like, New York City or something like that.
Yeah.
And if you don't have an HR person there, or if your HR person is unwilling to help you, you know, what do? You're SOL. Well, now he's saying, no, you got somewhere to go. He said, actually, I'm sure he is encouraging people to speak out. And that's what the Me Too movement actually has been all about, the courage to speak out. Hasn't been that courage, but other people coming out, other people deciding to tell their story and testify, it, you know, it gives other people, or inspires other people, to do the same. You know, I mean,
yeah.
Or inspires us.
Yeah. I wonder if any of the other leagues are going to take notice and maybe try to implement that
in
their situations.
It's a good idea, man. NFL should do it. Adam Silver, I'm a big fan. He's doing a lot of progressive things with the NBA. That's just the latest. And they're looking into the Dallas Mavs internal investigation, the NBA now. I don't think they've launched their own investigation yet, but they're going to ride the coattails of the Dallas Mavs investigation, which means they want to know who knew what and when did they know it. And that's basically, I think, being asked more about Mark Cuban. Okay, we'll get into that, too, a little bit later on. The other story here, Winter Olympics, Team USA making a move. USA, USA. Team USA actually is now in fourth place overall with 21 medals. They are behind Germany with 26 medals. Canada is in second with 27 medals. The Norwegians are still dominating the Winter Olympics. They have 37 total medals, 13 gold medals. In fifth place, right behind the United States, in fourth, the Netherlands with 18 total medals. And how about this? The story of the weekend in the Winter Olympics for America. I know it sounds crazy. You know how much, you know, we mock and make fun of curling, right? Our men's curling team, I believe, is curling for the gold. I don't know how you.
Nice.
They're in the gold medal match for curling. Like, that, isn't that amazing?
That's awesome.
How the hell did that happen? How the hell is Team USA? I read that this morning and I was like, no, it must be like that's from The Onion or something. No. The men's curling team, which plays Sweden Saturday for a gold medal, basically is, they're like the Jamaican bobsled team of, you know, of curling. They really are. Like, it's like a movie. They're going to make a movie out of this. Because apparently, like last year, last Olympics, last Winter Olympics, the American curling team, I think they finished last, like dead last. Like, they were considered terrible. And now they're, you know, they're curling for the gold. Is it curling for the, curling match?
Hey, you know what? The way you say it is the right way.
I don't know. But yeah, to me, that's a really cool story. I didn't know that. So USA curling, baby. Dominate. Yeah, snowboarding.
It's gonna be the new fad, man. Everybody's gonna be out there curling.
Everybody's gonna be out there curling. Who knew? Isn't that the guy that looks like Andy Reid that's on the curling team? Have you seen this guy?
No.
Oh, you should look. Yeah, uh-uh. So down there, it looks like Andy Reid. Yeah, no question. Okay. That's one story from the Winter Olympics. All right. We'll get into some more Winter Olympic talk later on the show. The NBA, all the teams in the state of Texas are playing on the road. Oh, sorry, not even Houston. Houston is actually playing at home. They're Minnesota's at Houston, San Antonio's at Denver, and Dallas is at the Lakers tonight. So NBA action starting up. I think it started up yesterday, but now most of the NBA teams are in action. San Antonio still dealing with a lot of drama with the Kawhi Leonard situation. We talked about that ad nauseum yesterday. We'll get back into that discussion too, because I think San Antonio Spurs fans are starting to freak out a little bit about it. And now they're getting angry. They're mad at Kawhi. Apparently there's a movement of Spurs fans that are just mad at Kawhi. They're blaming Kawhi hadn't spoken out. He could easily speak out and say there's nothing to this. And if it is something to it, Kawhi doesn't want to play because he doesn't want to play either because he doesn't think the Spurs have a chance to win the title, or he doesn't want to play because he wants to be healthy in time for next year so that he can showcase his abilities and keep his value and his stock really high because he'll be a free agent in the summer of 2019. So either way, they think he's being selfish, which is not the Spurs way. All right? The Spurs way. You don't think about yourself. So at the heart of this is him bucking the culture of what has helped the Spurs build this dynasty with all this longevity, is that they've had the most unselfish superstars in the history of the NBA, arguably. I mean, Tim Duncan took like 3 pay cuts throughout his career. Tim Duncan, it just didn't matter to him to be the highest. He should have been always one of the, and he still ended up being one of the highest paid NBA athletes, I think of all time, in the top 10 or something. I don't know if he's there now, but he took a lot of pay cuts in his career so the Spurs could build and keep that roster and keep that roster so deep and keep the bench so talented and be able to invest in younger guys like Kawhi Leonard. But you know, that might change if you don't have those type of stars that are willing to, you know, basically do what's best for the team. That's rare. Tom Brady has taken a lot less money, too, to help the Patriots, and that's been a big part of why they've been able to build that dynasty, too. All right. In hockey news, the Dallas Stars beat the LA Kings 2-0 last night, and Texas baseball starts their series up against LSU tonight, as a matter of fact. All right. And also, Marcus Peters. And this story, we were just talking about it, a little crosstalk with BK and Trey. Traded to the Rams. That's a big trade. I mean, the Rams are loaded. The Rams are going to be a scary team for the next 3 or 4 years. They're going to be one of those teams that they got to run now in them. Kind of how Seattle had when they first got, you know, Russell Wilson going, when they first figured out he was going to be a starter and a franchise quarterback, and they had that 3-4 years in them. That offense is so good. That's why I think they're now building the defense. That offense is going to be good for a few years. It just is. Sean McVay's great. They got Todd Gurley. They got Jared Goff. And they got tons of weapons around them. So that's also the big news. All right, that's the rundown brought to you by good friends at Top Gun Lawn and Equipment Rentals. TopGun.net with 2 N's is where you find out more about Top Gun Lawn and Equipment Rentals. Okay, let's get into the college basketball black market really quickly and talk about the scandal. And the FBI is the one that exposed this, because the FBI started tracking the agency, the ASM agency, and, you know, what they, through wiretapping and an investigation, you know, they found a widespread, basically a kind of a widespread net of corruption where they would pay different players and try to steer those players to sign future contracts with shoe companies in the future, or sign with certain schools, or sign with them later on too. I mean, there's a web of this kind of stuff, because there's all these different types of ways that all of these different entities are connected. So 20 different Division I programs, including University of Texas, North Carolina, Duke, Kentucky, Michigan State, USC, Alabama. I mean, you're talking about some blue bloods in college basketball on this list, to nobody's surprise. But what I thought was really, really interesting about this report, and, you know, there are a lot of different aspects to it. They would have in their ledgers, because they have now, what they have is basically, I mean, they've got the smoking gun. Because there's record now of them paying players, or at least them saying they paid players, and even what amounts they paid to the players. So Dennis Smith Jr. for the Mavs now, apparently they paid him between $43,000 and $73,000. That's what the ASM agent Steven Pena says that they paid in him to what they called loans to players. And I'm assuming that loan would be repaid when they would sign with that agency whenever they could. But that was essentially paying for the player and paying for the player to sign with you or to steer him in a certain direction. But he didn't even sign with him. I mean, he didn't even sign with him. Even if he just took the money, allegedly took the money and didn't even sign with him. That's how corrupt it is. And it's weird. They were trying to, in the documents or in the wiretapping, they have them saying that they have options to recoup the money, but it's like an illegal payment anyway. It's like a drug dealer reporting that he got robbed. Like, that. What do you mean recoup the money? Like, he took the money. You can say that you paid him and you want the money back, and maybe you can sue him for it in court, in civil court, but. You know what I mean? That in itself is an illicit illegal payment, and definitely, obviously, by NCAA rules, not allowed. And this is why it connects to the schools, is because if that player who once he took the money was ineligible, which in theory they are ineligible once they take the money, then they played for that team. Therefore, they can be punished under the NCAA rules. And then you're talking about the retroactive punishment. Because those players playing their impact, and you know, then we get into the repercussions of it. So I think that's how it could hurt the universities, unless there are university coaches who are knowledgeable about this and actually were involved in arranging some of these payments. I don't see them being able to come down hard on the universities. The only liability right now the university would have, and there could be more stuff that leaks out, would be those players who were ineligible played for you at one point when they were ineligible, depending on the timeline of when they took the money. And we all assume they would take the money before they went to the school, or maybe while they went to the school. I mean, we don't know. So that's where it gets sticky, and we don't really know until there are further details that come out about how it all worked. Like, what was the payment structure, and how did they pay the guys, and when did they pay the guys, and was it in payments, or did they just get a big briefcase of cash? Like, how do you pay a guy 70-something thousand? Like, is it a payment thing? You're not writing them a check.
They put it all in big old trash bags.
Is it like, yeah, like, just, is it cash? Like, yeah, I'm saying, like, man, that just feels shady. I mean, Dave Chappelle said he once did and we went to see him in Austin, and he actually has this same same stand-up routine on Netflix. Said he said he never felt so unsafe as to when he did his first big gig, and they gave him $10,000. He said, maybe $9,999 or something, $1,000 to basically as payment. And they gave it to him in cash. He was like, I don't want this cash. And you got a check? He's like, no, man, we got cash. And they gave him the cash. He had to ride the subway all the way home with that cash. And he felt like he felt like he was going to die and somebody was going to kill him like three or four times.
I'm actually surprised that didn't happen.
Like, he's like, because he said he had never had. Yeah, exactly. And he also, this is pretty interesting, he said, now he knows how it feels to be a woman. Because you got something on you at all times that people would kill to have, and they covet, which was only a connection that Dave Chappelle could make. But I digress. This is why college sports is just, and I'll put it like this: not everybody is corrupt in college sports, but everybody's cheating. Not everybody is corrupt, but everybody's cheating. And the reason I say that is because the rules are so. They're so unrealistic. They just lack pragmatism. They're not based in any type of reality. That's so crazy. And that NCAA rule book is about the size of the yellow pages. All right. And so there are so many rules in there about, you know, impermissible benefits and putting too much frosting on cupcakes and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And they've always relaxed those since there have been threats of unionizing by Northwestern and boycotts, and there have been lawsuits. So they've relaxed some of those rules. There are unlimited snacks now, which in my world would be amazing. I'm glad they didn't have unlimited snacks when I was playing, because I never would have made it to the NFL. Unlimited snacks? I mean, you can't limit me then. So I'm taking all the snacks. I mean, I don't understand. If they're unlimited, then I will have a room full of snacks. I don't know how every player just doesn't have a room full of snacks. My house, my dorm room would look like a convenience store. I mean, I would just have chip aisles and, like, you know what I mean, candy aisles. Oh yeah, go. I'm telling you, that's what I did. That's how I attracted ladies when I was playing. I would, and this is probably illegal now, but who cares now? NCAA's coming anyway. We would from the mess hall. Like, now they have a different thing now, but when we were there, they would just have like a dining hall just for athletes. And I would come with Tupperware, and I would take like extra chicken fried steak and extra chopped steak and extra. And I would take like mashed potatoes and baked potatoes and take them up to the room. And like when the track girls got done and they was hungry later that night and they had nowhere to go and they was broke, I'd be like, you want to come upstairs? I got some chicken fried steak I can heat up for you. Where you get that from? I was like, the same chicken fried steak we had down there. I got some. Then you'd be surprised. It's the same thing applies. Women love a free meal. They were like, oh, you know what? I'll be up there. Then I used to have like three or four women up in my room eating, just eating and hanging out, kicking it.
That almost,
watching romantic comedies.
It almost sounds like a prison, a prison movie.
Oh, it was. Because I was hungry, man. Because the dining hall was early. It was like at 6, like supper time. So, dude, I would go. We'd go down. I would buy some Tupperware and I'd steal tons of food. I'd go through there with a backpack, put it all in the backpack, eat, go upstairs, put it all in the refrigerator, keep it fresh, and then I had food like for the night and food, whatever. And then I figured out that hey, the ladies were hungry. Ladies need some food.
Yeah.
So that was my pickup line. You hungry? When everything's closed, yeah. You hungry? Well, I got a little food upstairs if you want to come.
Chicken fried steak at midnight.
Yeah, bro. Ducks. You'd be surprised, brother. You'd be surprised.
I'm 9 out of 6 Street. Go get some chicken fried steak at Rod B's dorm.
Exactly. Hey, they called it the Show Palace. But I digress. My point is, my initial point before I went into the random rant, everybody in college sports is cheating, and this is a prime example of it, this scandal. Because the universities don't have to know anything about it, but the boosters who are out there, giving $100 handshakes, as Chris Sims said, and, they're out there, representing the university and trying to do what's best for the university. And then there are agents who are trying to do what's best for them, but they're also trying to steer certain players to certain universities where they have ties and they have relationships. And then there are the shoe companies out there kind of lurking in the background who have relationships with the agents and relationships with the schools. And then there's that murky tie, like, oh, how much are they involved? Because we want you to go to the school that has this relationship with this shoe company. And so there's the shady uncle that's representing the player who's like, hey man, yeah, $50,000, we can do whatever you need. And it's like, is he speaking for the player? Like, who's paying who? All this. Then there are the runners. There are runners out there. Like, I'm talking about when the guys go down to 6th Street, there are agents who send runners. And now the runners, they wear mini skirts and they have really, they got really long hair and it's really nice. They don't always just look like guys in suits or the runners. You know what I mean? The runners just speak for the agents. They make the introduction or can be the go-between. So, yeah, man, it's a really, really murky world. I don't really know if there's any way you clean it up. And then, if you're a one and done, there is a lot of incentive for you to be corrupt and to take the money. You're one and done. What do you care? You're one and done. I'm in, I'm out. You know what I mean? So that a lot of one and done guys who are being told, oh, don't worry, by the time the NCAA catches up with you, and they don't care anyway, by the time they catch up with it, you're already being in the league anyway. You don't worry about it. You won't even have to worry about the consequences. So it's one of those things where, the NCAA, I don't expect them to do anything. They don't really have any power. They're impotent. They have a money compass and not a moral compass, so they don't care about this kind of stuff, really. The only reason they are going to react to it is because it became a public story. And now they look bad if they don't do something. And I say that, and yet they haven't acted on Baylor, but it's the NCAA. I mean, they're the worst of the worst. But it's coming. That situation is happening in some way, form, or fashion on almost every major college sports program. And like I said, everybody's not corrupt because the schools may not be involved, but there's so many other factors that are satellites in that situation, that are representing different parties that may get the schools involved, that may suck them down into the mire. And that's what's happening now. So I don't think, Dawson said, these schools, just like Texas, I'm not saying that Texas is involved, maybe, but I don't think they are. They now, just through degrees of separation, have been linked to this scandal. And now, and largely the NCAA relies on schools to self-police. That's why they have compliance departments. They basically, in Texas, by the way, their compliance department, notoriously a pain in the arse, which is good. You want your regulation department to be annoying. They're supposed to be annoying. You know what I mean? And make sure that everybody's within the rules. So it'll be really, really interesting to see how this thing goes down and to see the different layers to it. All right. We come back. We'll dive into Adam Silver's response to the Dallas Mavericks scandal about a workplace culture of harassment and misconduct. We'll get into that because I think it's brilliant by Adam Silver. We'll also dive into some NFL draft discussion as well. There are a lot of comparisons being made between players who are coming out this year and some guys in the league. We'll get into those. We'll talk about who the top two prospects are reportedly in the draft, and they're not quarterbacks, and my mind is blown. We'll talk about that too. All that and more right here on the broadcast. This is right here, The Horn, 104.9 and AM 1260.
There are times when you need someone. Yeah. I will be by your side.
All right, welcome back to the Rodcast. You can always hit us up on the Specs text line, 512-337-3776. You also can hit me up via Twitter at Rod Babers. My man Ray at Ray from the 361 is how you hit him up. Okay, there have been a lot of comparisons made in the NFL draft over the last, at least about the NFL draft, the upcoming draft, about the quarterbacks. And Matt Miller of Bleacher Report, who is their lead scout, scout analyst, he actually wrote up a piece where he compared all the quarterbacks to guys who are at least in the league or most recently have been in the league. So we'll get into that, too, coming up, and we'll talk some of the quarterbacks. There are more disparaging scouting reports about Lamar Jackson and now some about Baker Mayfield. That we'll get into as well, because I think that's something that's expected. But up until now, most of the reports about Baker Mayfield have been really, really positive, other than, you know, the crotch grabbing and the flag planting and the comparisons to Johnny Manziel. Like I said, he's been rising in most of the mock drafts that I've seen. That actually, you know, we'll see if that changes or not. All right. The first thing that I want to get into really quickly while we have some time. The NBA is proposing, well, at least the NBA is thinking of proposing, I should say, another radical idea that would affect the postseason. Now, earlier on, I think early this week, and maybe right after the All-Star game, it was reported that the NBA would consider changing the current playoff format from like kind of a reseeding. So each conference, Western, Eastern Conference, will still have eight teams they would send to the playoffs, but instead of playing a conference playoff, they would be playing in a tournament that is seeded 1 through 16 based on their record, period. All right, so still eight teams from each conference, but they would be seeded 1 through 16, and it wouldn't, you know, matter if you were from the Western Conference or the Eastern Conference. And they were going to try to get the best team, at least the best two teams available. I'll say the best team to try to, you know, to beat the Golden State Warriors. I think that's where the model, I think, is being, or at least that's the genesis of the idea, is you can't allow the Western Conference, which has been the deepest conference in the NBA, now with the Warriors, to tip the scales too much in favor of the West, where the Western Conference Finals every year is actually the de facto championship game. And then the finals is not the matchup of the two best teams in the NBA. He wants to change that. I think Adam Silver wants to change that. LeBron James actually disagrees. LeBron James said recently this week that he's against them reseeding the NBA postseason. But that's just one idea. So Zach Lowe reported that there is another idea on the horizon as well. This one would be a four-team tournament featuring the 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th seeds in each conference. The 7th seed would host the 8th seed, the winner of that single game nabbing the 7 spots. Meanwhile, the 9th seed would host the 10th seed, with the winner of that game facing the loser of the 7-8. It would basically be a play-in tournament into the NBA postseason or into the NBA playoffs. That's what the latest proposal is. It's a play-in tournament, consider it the wild card game. It would be an NBA wild card round, essentially. Like, that would be another proposal. That may be fun too. This is, I think, what Adam Silver is basically throwing out there, that the beginning of the NBA playoffs is boring, and people tune it out. They really do. There aren't a lot of upsets early on in the NBA playoffs. You just don't get them. The best series in the NBA playoffs, they come later on. And now when you have these really long series, I'm not saying you won't be a competitive series if you're an NBA fan, but it doesn't draw a lot of interest. People, as the playoffs build to the finals, that's when you start getting more and more, you know, outside NBA fans to tune in for the playoffs. So I think he's trying to make it interesting. You know, it worked for the All-Star game. They changed it up, and it was more interesting. It was more competitive. Yeah. Adam Silver saying, you know what? I'm doubling down. That experiment works. Maybe we need another experiment, because think about this: the NBA is the most popular pro sports league in America among the youth. The youths, yeah.
Definitely. You know, and I think a lot of it has to do with Adam Silver noticing the great ratings that the Western Conference playoffs gets compared to the Eastern Conference. You know, the Eastern Conference, nobody's really watching the 76ers against the Bucks, or you know, any of those kind of any of those other games that are going on during the playoffs. Everybody's only watching LeBron, and those games end up being only four games because he's usually sweeping through the playoffs. So I think he's trying to just balance that out a little bit.
Yeah. So you said it's a LeBron factor. I think the Warriors play a factor too now that they're new, but you're right.
I mean, definitely, but everybody still is excited to see teams play against the Warriors because at least they're going against good competition. You know, the Warriors, yes, the Warriors, last year, the Warriors did get close to sweeping through the playoffs, but I don't think that'll be the case this year. I think this year there's a lot more competition out there. You know, the Thunder have gotten so much better with Paul George out there, and same thing. I mean, you can't count the Spurs out. Even though Kawhi's probably not going to play this year, you still can't count the Spurs out. So I just think the competition is going to be a lot better during the playoffs this
year. Only five teams in the NBA right now have a better winning percentage than the Spurs, and that's without Kawhi Leonard. As I said, the Spurs have first world problems. They really do. I mean, it's, you know, they're still winning games even though they have a, you know, drama and a disaster going on. That's how good the Spurs are. But I will say this: I love the NBA is trying to be experimental and innovative. They understand the game has changed, that the entertainment ecosystem is different, and they're trying their best to evolve with it, or at least figure out what works. And we just talked about how baseball's been really stubborn with that. That was a new baseball proposal, and I talked about it with KD, and he didn't like it. It was that in the ninth inning, I think Rob Manfred said in the ninth inning that, and Rich Eisen broke this, that the team that's losing will, and maybe it's both teams, they will have their pick of what batters, what three batters they can play in the ninth inning. Like, they can bring up any three batters they want, which makes sense when you start comparing, you know, the superstars of every sport. When you're playing in the, and I think that it was only for the postseason, and people think it's stupid and it's crazy and it's too radical. When we start thinking about the NBA postseason, which we were just talking about, when it's the clutch time, when the game is on the line, you know, Russell Westbrook and, you know, Kevin Durant and LeBron James and, you know, Steph Curry, they become a focal point. Like, people zero in on them. They're the stars. It's all on them. And that's part of the drama and the narrative. It's like, man, what's LeBron going to do in the clutch? Is he going to fold like a cheap suit, or is he going to show up? That's part of the narrative. Kobe shows up. He's a killer. Like, that's part of it. And same thing with Tom Brady, right, in the clutch. You know, your best players, hopefully they get a chance to play when the game is on the line. And for baseball, that's not always really the case. You know, I mean, game could be on the line, and they could be at the worst part of their batting order. And he's saying, no, the guys you pay all that money for, what if I could put Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton and, you know, throw all my best hitters up at the plate at once when the game was on the line? I don't necessarily think it's a bad idea, but people in baseball scoff at those kind of ideas. You know, they mock them, and that's why in 25 years, soccer will be a more popular American sport. I'm not making that up. The stats back it up. Mm-hmm. Go look. 7% of Americans say that soccer is their favorite sport. Only 9% of Americans say baseball is their favorite sport. It's the lowest in popularity ratings for it since – or the popularity survey, I should say, since 1937. Yeah, and it's like, oh, no, I like it the way it is. Okay, you like it the way it is. That don't mean everybody else do. And the NBA is like, no, you know what, we might have a tournament style. We might do that. You know what, let's have a draft for the All-Star game. Yeah, let's do that. You know what, we're going to make a Hack-a-Shack rule because people don't like Hack-a-Shack. Y'all don't like that? You know what, I'm changing the rule. The NBA is like Oprah. You get whatever you want. Like, you want that? We're going to do that. Let's do it. You know what I mean? And baseball, you know, They want to keep these unwritten rules, and they want it to be the same game that Babe Ruth played. And yet they forget that, hey, man, they moved the mound. They changed the composition of the ball. They got the designated hitter. There have all been evolutions in the game to spice up the game. All of a sudden, everybody wants to go back to the old school. You know what I mean? But I think it's hurting the game. I would love to see them change it up a little bit, especially now that the game's so fun to watch. More home runs being hit now than in the steroid era. You know, hell, the Yankees are probably going to break the all-time home run record for a team. Next year. There's no doubt they're going to do it. You know, considering what kind of pace they were on last year, and they are added Giancarlo Stanton. So I don't know. It's interesting now you're starting to hear all these ideas of teams being, or at least leagues, I should say, being very progressive and innovative and creative. The NFL is on the same book. I mean, the NFL's like, oh, you know what? Let them dance now. Hell, whatever it takes. You know what I mean? Whatever it takes to be able to relate to the younger generation and the millennials. And everybody's experimenting in ways to do it now. And I think Rob Manfred wants to do it, but baseball's dragging their feet on it. They really are. All right, we didn't get into the draft talk. We'll do that when we come back next segment. We'll talk about the top two prospects in the draft. Matt Miller from Bleacher Report says this is the top two prospects in the draft, regardless of position, and so did Albert Breer. So both of these guys, now it's two guys whose opinion I respect, who do real good work, who have said the top two prospects in the draft aren't quarterbacks. We'll get into that and talk about it when we come back. All that and more right here on the Rodcast. This is the Horn, 104.9 and AM 1260. All right, welcome back to the Rodcast. You can hit us up on the Specs text line, 512-337-3776. You can hit me up at Rod Babers in the Twitterverse, my man Ray at Ray from the 361. Robert Klimko of Sports Illustrated, he's doing an ongoing series about the quarterbacks coming out in the draft, and he's talking to different scouts and former NFL head coaches, not head coaches, but coordinators, I should say, about the players. And Daryl Bevel was the coach, the former coach that he brought on, former offensive coordinator with the Seahawks. So he was Russell Wilson's offensive coordinator, most notably. And they brought him on to talk about Baker Mayfield. And he was very complimentary of Baker Mayfield. Like, really, I mean, he really did. He loved him. A lot of people do. And, you know, I was starting to look at because the scouting season is all about the liabilities in your skill set. I would say that anybody can scout a player and tell you what a player does well. It takes you three or four plays watching to be like, oh, guy's quick. He's got a good burst. He's got good BGO. The guy's got great hands. It doesn't take long. But if you want to find out what's wrong with a player and if it's coachable, it's something you can coach out of him. That is what being a scout is really all about. And that's what the scouting season, that's why it's partially so negative. So I was looking at what his criticisms were of Baker Mayfield and his skill set. And he had two things basically that he brought up. And one, everybody knows, Baker Mayfield's height. Brings up the fact that he's 6'1", but he also brought up the fact that Russell Wilson, you know, he was short. He is the shortest quarterback to ever win a Super Bowl, I believe. But he brought up the fact that, you know, Russell Wilson was short and he knew how to throw through windows, and he didn't have a lot of batted balls. And neither does Baker Mayfield. You don't bat his ball down a lot, which means he's figured out how to throw through certain windows, kind of like Case Keenum as well. Drew Brees. So I think a lot of short quarterbacks having success in the NFL recently, that's really helped Baker Mayfield. Hell, Johnny Manziel was drafted in the first round, and I think he's like an inch and a half shorter than Baker Mayfield. So short quarterbacks lately is good for Baker, and that's what he said. He said it can be done. It's not a huge setback. It's not a deal breaker. The one thing that he did say was interesting that he thinks is going to be the biggest challenge, he said the air raid offense that he comes from, that Oklahoma offense, Lincoln Riley from the air raid roots, the Big 12 being the spread air raid conference, he said that's going to hurt him because that offense takes away the responsibility of the quarterback, or it takes a lot of responsibility off the quarterback. In the NFL, it is the opposite of that. So he said it's going to be interesting to see how he transitions. And I thought it was funny that he brought that up because, you know, I remember when, you know, the spread quarterback, or at least the air raid quarterback, was considered a negative stigma to have on you, like, oh, he's from an air raid system. But I don't necessarily know if that is still the case. I remember the Texas Tech quarterbacks, like, oh, man, a quarterback coming out of Texas Tech, man, you don't want that guy. That guy's their insert quarterback here systems. Those quarterbacks don't perform well. And yet last year, Patrick Mahomes, Texas Tech quarterback, drafted in the first round. Times there are changing. That's air raid all the way. Cliff Kingsbury beat me when I was playing at Texas in Lubbock with that air raid system. I mean, he's one of the greatest air raid minds out there. And that's Patrick Mahomes coming from that system, drafted in the first round. So times there are changing about that. And keep in mind, Nick Foles is from an air raid system with Rich Rod at Arizona. That's air raid. Jared Goff, air raid system at Cal. Case Keenum, air raid system at U of H. Jimmy Garoppolo is from an air raid system. It's one of those things where there are certain what I call quarterback slurs. You know, somebody calls a quarterback a game manager. It's like, he's a game manager. They think of it as a negative thing. Gunslingers, thought of as a negative thing. Remember Deshaun Watson said, I don't want scouts to use the label or the term dual threat when talking about me, because he thinks it's a negative, like, term. He said he thinks it's code speak for something. And maybe that was a racial component or not. But I think what he meant about it was that it's a quarterback slur. When somebody calls a quarterback a dual threat quarterback, that's almost this insinuation that they can't be a pocket passing quarterback because they're dual threat. They can't be. It's in their nature to be a pocket pass quarterback. When in reality, they can pass on a pocket at times, and they also can be a runner. It should be a positive, but it's not really considered to be. Same thing with the air raid system. That's a misnomer. That's old school. Your Super Bowl MVP came from an air raid system. Case Keenum came from an air raid system. Jimmy Garoppolo with Shanahan came from an air raid system. And the one complaint about the air raid system is, you know, those guys have to look to the sideline to get their play call, right? Oh, they got to look to the sideline. They go in there, they get lined up, then the coach from the sideline, he calls the plays, and they send it in with hand signals, or they got poster boards with Beyonce and SpongeBob on them, and they send in the plays. And that very well may be true, but think about this. Sean McVay, who made Jared Goff look like an MVP candidate this year from, you know, being a laughing stock, considered a bust last year, another air raid quarterback, He did it basically kind of revolutionizing the way they use the play clock and the way they use the quarterback communication system. So what he would do is you got to cut off the quarterback headset at 15 seconds left on the play clock. There are 40 seconds to start with. So what he does is he gets the guys to the line of scrimmage with 30 seconds left on the play clock. All right, so within 10 seconds of the play clock starting, get to the line, and then he can still talk to his quarterback for 15 seconds. And nobody in the NFL was doing this other than Shanahan, which is, makes sense, right? Shanahan was doing it too, and he's doing it with Jimmy Garoppolo now. They're the only two guys that were doing it, and Sean McVay is from the Shanahan tree from when they were up there with RG3 and also exposed to an air raid type of an offense, all right, with Art Briles' offense and Baylor and RG3, and they implemented that into their offensive philosophy, but I digress. So Sean McVay is talking to his quarterbacks before the snap for like 10 seconds. And the reason that's important is because, you know, if he's getting to the line within 25 seconds, 30 to 25 seconds, it's essentially the same premise as getting the play from the sideline. So now I can just talk to him. I can just tell him what I see. Hey, Jared Goff, that middle linebacker, let's make him the mic. Let's switch it. Let's flip the field on him. Let's go with the motion and watch that safety. I think he's gonna drop back as a single safety. He's faking like it's gonna be a two deep. You know what I mean? You can basically coach. That's even better than the poster boards. So that is something that I think is gonna help air raid quarterbacks too. And keep in mind, you know, the Philadelphia Eagles and the Kansas City Chiefs, who were where we talked about the best hybridized offense of college concepts and pro concepts this year, they used a ton of air raid stuff. Hell, man, at times that thing looked like Mike Leach was out there coaching it. Bunch concepts, crossing routes, pick routes. They ran a lot of those air raid concepts. And obviously the Eagles ran a ton of RPOs too, which is also a college concept that Chip Kelly popularized at the NFL level. So I don't know if the air raid thing counts. I know Baker Mayfield, he may fail, but it won't be because he's an air raid quarterback. Right now is the time of the air raid quarterback. Your Super Bowl MVP is an air raid quarterback. All right, so we'll come back. We'll get into some more draft talk, too. I want to get into the two best prospects in the draft, and they aren't quarterbacks. I think that's a surprising discussion. Also, we'll get into some more NBA news, notes, and nuggets. All that and more right here on the broadcast. This is The Horn, 104.9 and AM 1260.